The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters. It's 10 a.m. here in London. I'm Frank Holland, and here is your 5 at 5. Stocks doing something for the first time since January as investors await today's March inflation report and read the tea leaves on what it could mean for the Fed's next move. Getting ahead of that report, the one voting Fed president who says he's already expecting just one rate cut by the central bank this year, but is open to the possibility of none at all. We speak with former Fed Vice Chair Roger Ferguson. We're going to get his take. In China, breaking news this morning as Fitch downgrades the country's long-term outlook to negative. We are live in Beijing with the reaction. Plus, Apple hits an iPhone production milestone in India. And later, not just the Max. Boeing responds to new whistleblower allegations over its 787 Dreamliner jumbo jet. It is Wednesday, April the 10th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. We are coming to you right now from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. As always, we're going to kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. After a bit of a mixed day for stocks, I saw the S&P close lower for a seventh session in a row. That's the first time that's happened since January. The Nasdaq and the Russell 2000, however, they're riding three-session win streaks. We're taking a look at futures right now. We see we're in the green across the board. Looks like the Nasdaq would open up just about 0.25% higher. Looks like the Dow would open up just about 70 points higher. We're also checking the bond market ahead of today's March inflation report that's due out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. Treasury yields trading at their highest level since November. Taking a look at the benchmark right now at 4.35% when we're talking the yield on the 10-year. Also looking at oil coming off back-to-back losing sessions. Taking a look at oil right now, first with WTI. That's where we look at it here in the U.S., up just about almost a half a percent, just over a third of a percent, I should say, trading at about $85.50 a barrel. Brent crude, just under $90 a barrel, also up one third of a percent. All right, time now for a check on the early action here in Europe. Sylvia Amaro is here with me right here in our London newsroom with much more on that and green across the board in Europe as well.
That's right. We're seeing European stocks mostly higher so far in the session. I would highlight that the German Börse is actually the outperformer at this stage by almost 0.8%. We're also seeing the CAC 40 in France at about 0.6% and similar moves over here in the United Kingdom. Now, this is a totally different narrative from what we had yesterday here in Europe. Oh, the overall stock 600 ended Tuesday session down by about 0.6%. But today, the narrative is a lot different. Having said that, investors are still awaiting that key ECB rate decision due tomorrow. Let's see what will come out of that. But some positive trading results out of European companies are boosting some of these moves. When it comes to the sector breakdown, this is the picture at this stage. We have technology stocks outperforming up by about 1.3%. Here, one of the drivers is really those positive results from TSMC earlier today that is boosting the overall sector. Basic resources up by about 1.2%. But I also want to take you to oil and gas stocks because those are also seeing relatively important moves off of the back of higher oil prices. But let's see, all eyes at this stage are on the CPI print out of the United States. And then, of course, tomorrow, the bank, the European Central Bank, Frank.
Yeah, that CPI report is going to be possibly a big market mover in the U.S. But first, we're going to switch gears. We're actually going to turn our attention to China. And a developing story this morning as a major global ratings agency downgrades the country's long-term outlook. Our Eunice Yoon joins us now from Beijing with much more on this story. Eunice, good morning.
Hey, Frank. Well, Fitch followed Moody's by cutting China's long-term credit outlook, citing uncertain economic prospects. The ratings agency said the outlook revision reflects increasing risks to China's public finance outlook as the country contends with more uncertain economic prospects amid a transition away from property-reliant growth. Now, the ratings agency did maintain its A-plus rating for China, but it did forecast that the general government debt, so this is for local as well as central, would rise to 61.3% of GDP for 2024. This compares to 56.1% in 2023. And they cited concerns about fiscal support. Now, China, as you could imagine, criticized this move and hit back strongly, saying that this was a regrettable move by Fitch and that it fails to, what they said, considers the positive role of fiscal policies to support growth. They argued that China's debt is under control and that the 2024 target that China has set of around 5% growth is in line with reality. Now, in terms of the impact on the markets, there wasn't a whole lot of a change with the 10-year sovereign bond yield. The yuan also remained relatively stable. The local markets, though, did fall. And investors here are just very nervous about the outlook for the economy and don't feel very confident. Frank?
So, Eunice, I know you're talking to investors about not only the debt levels that Fitch is citing, but also other parts of the economy as China tries to move away from property-reliant growth. What are you hearing about the manufacturing sector? A lot of pressure on that sector to ramp up growth despite overcapacity.
Absolutely. There's been a ton of pressure to maintain job growth. And so because of that, that in turn puts pressure on the factories to stay open and pump out a whole lot of stuff throughout the world. But in terms of the data, what we have been seeing is that the January to February data, when it comes to exports, manufacturing, even retail sales, were improving a bit, to consumer inflation looking a little bit better. So that was one of the reasons why this Fitch downgrade hit pretty hard locally, because people are looking to next week on April 16th. There's going to be a Q1 data. The hope is that we're going to start seeing some sort of turnaround here. But this latest warning really just kind of rattled people here.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, Fitch downgrades China's outlook to negative from stable. Eunice Yun with the very latest on this story. I think it could be a very busy day for you. Eunice, thank you very much. All right, turning our attention now to this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau is back at CNBC headquarters with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good Wednesday morning to you. All right, let's start with Apple. Bloomberg reporting this morning the company has assembled some $14 billion worth of iPhones in India so far in fiscal 2024, now accounting for about 1 in 7 of all new iPhones globally. Among the companies taking lead when it comes to Indian iPhone manufacturing, number one is Foxconn, assembling about 67% of all Indian-made iPhones, followed by Pegatron and Tata-owned Wistron. Meanwhile, we're watching shares of Tilray after it fell some 20% yesterday. Right now, just unchanged in the pre-market. And this after the cannabis giant reported a wider than expected loss for its most recent quarter and lowered its full-year guidance. Yesterday's drop put shares in negative territory on the year, and a number of industry peers falling in tandem with Tilray, including Aurora Cannabis, Canopy Growth, and Cronos Group. And Atlanta Fed President and FOMC voting member Rafael Bostic is reiterating his call for just one interest rate cut this year, adding he's open to changing his view should the economic picture change as well. Bostic says the enduring strength of the U.S. economy and labor market are just two reasons why less easing may be appropriate. And when asked about the possibility of no rate cut at all this year, Bostic tells Yahoo, quote, I do think the risks are balanced, and given that the U.S. economy has been so robust, I can't take off the possibility that the rate cuts may even have to move further out, Frank.
Yeah, this picture continues to shift. We'll get another read on inflation, obviously, later today with CPI.
Absolutely.
And we'll continue to read the tea leaves. Silvana, thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Bostic's comments, of course, coming as we await today's March CPI report and read the tea leaves on what it could mean for Fed policy next month and well beyond. Economists are expecting that headline figure to come in at 3.4% year over year, just slightly hotter than a month ago, and for core prices to cool just a bit to 3.7% year over year. And according to the Dean of Valuations, Aswath Damodaran, speaking on CNBC yesterday, those numbers, they are not likely falling anytime soon.
Looking at the bond market, which to me is the best indicator of what investors think about expected inflation, and you look at the T-bond rate is up from 3.88% to 4.35%, 4.4%. That suggests to me that investors in the bond market are expecting inflation to continue to stay above 3%, no matter what the Fed says about that inflation.
All right, joining me now to discuss is Emma Wall, head of investment research and analysis at Hargreaves Lansdowne Asset Management. Emma, hello from London. I want to get right into it. What are your expectations for CPI and what do you think that means for the markets?
We're pretty much in line with consensus. So we do think there'll be a slight increase this month, mostly due to energy prices coming in hotter than they have been previously. But if you strip out energy and you just focus on core, we do expect that downward trend to continue. The difficulty is that most US consumers can't just strip out core inflation, right? It's what they're experiencing day in, day out. And therefore, that inflation figure is something they'll be very focused on. And of course, the Fed will be very focused on. Now, I'm not quite as pessimistic as some of your earlier guests. I do think we do see some rate cuts in the second half of this year. But it's very telling that, you know, in December, we were talking about seven rate cuts from the Fed in 2024. Now we're even discussing the possibility of none. So it is a very different economic and fiscal picture than it was just a few months ago.
Yeah, what a quite a turnaround. I think that there was even some discussion of possibly a hike. I think that rattled the markets just a bit. So when we talk about this CPI report, one of the big things we have to focus on is shelter inflation. That seems to be one of the stickier parts about that. What are your expectations when it comes to shelter inflation?
Yeah, it's one of the, if you have a look in the data, there's so many different elements which are driving this inflation figure. Now, some stuff is coming down. For example, secondhand autos, that's coming down. Airfares were higher last month. We're expecting those to come down this month. But shelter is sticky, and we do expect that trend to continue. If you think about some of the drivers of inflation, we're talking about the health of the US consumer, the health of US households, which luckily is reasonably robust. And don't forget, we had those jobs figures that came in hotter than expected last week, which is an input into inflation, more people getting jobs, you've got wage inflation, you've got more consumers with more consumer spending. It means that they can swallow those higher prices, greater demand. So inflation definitely is sticky. I don't expect that the Fed will veer from the course, however. It's giving a lot of forward guidance. It knows inflation is sticky. That's why it's saying second half of the year, three late rate cuts. And those rate cuts, we expect to be small rate cuts as well. That's the other thing that I think is key to this Fed policy.
Okay, so you do believe we are going to see some rate cuts this year. I want to go to the equity market. When you're advising clients, you say that the U.S. is your number one region, but are you playing the entire market? Something like, would you advise them to do an index fund? Or are there certain sectors that you see as more favorable with still a somewhat uncertain rate cut path forward?
Yeah, so investor confidence in the U.S. is really high when we surveyed our clients last week. And in fact, it's growing in emerging markets, whether or not that's still the case after we've had that news about China's rating from Fitch being downgraded earlier today. The US is a number one region for us, but it's not where we're seeing the greatest value. We're seeing much better value in terms of where markets are trading to kind of long-term averages in areas like the UK, in areas like China, which has just been so beaten up, but so much of the bad news is priced in. So the US should absolutely be the core of your investment portfolio, but potentially you should be taking some gains because over the last 18 months, as we know, although it's been volatile, it has been a fantastic performer. So taking some gains and looking at areas which are undervalued. So we think the UK emerging markets, and we still think there's a lot of value to be had in fixed income. You know, rates are high, but the trajectory is downwards. So if you're a more cautious investor, bringing in some fixed income into those portfolios.
You know, Emma, we have to let you go, but very quick. You said all the bad news in China is already priced in. So not surprised at all by today's downgrade from Fitch?
No, I think China has been so beaten up by the last couple of years. You know, going back to the pandemic and the sort of, you know, the way that the government handled the opening up of the economy. You know, if you just look at some quite high quality companies, which, yes, there is the question of how the government interplays with the equity market there. We do think so much of that bad news is priced in. So on a very long term view, we're not saying this is a 1 or 2 year play. We do think there is some value to be had in the Chinese stock market.
All right, Emma Wall, we have to leave the conversation there. Thank you so much. Appreciate your time and your insight. For more on today's CPI report and the trading day ahead, head over to CNBC Pro at cnbc.com/pro for exclusive insights and analysis. We have a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, much more on today's inflation report and Bostic's comments when we speak with former Fed Vice Chair Roger Ferguson and whether he's dialing back his rate cut expectations. Plus, digging into one major metal breakout and what could fuel its next move higher. And then later, Boeing facing new pressure over one of its most profitable planes. We are not talking about the MAX. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. As we mentioned earlier in the show, treasuries are hitting multi-month highs. And we're also keeping a very close eye on the commodity space. That includes gold, which continues to hit fresh all-time highs. Right now trading at just about $23.70 an ounce and up over 14% so far this year. We're also watching silver surging, now sitting at its highest level since June of 2021. Even aluminum getting a boost in recent weeks, up more than 9% in the last month. Hitting its highest price since February of last year. And after months of trading kind of sideways, copper's also having a big breakout, surging to its highest level in more than a year. Our Pippa Stevens joins us now with more and the names to watch when it comes to copper. Pippa, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. Well, copper is at the highest since January 2023. And according to Wall Street firms, the gains could just be getting started. Bank of America is saying this week that, quote, the copper supply crisis is here. The firm noting the metal is at the epicenter of the energy transition and pointed to four factors that will support prices: investment in green technologies, a rebound of the global economy, restocking, and rate cuts, adding that the lack of mine projects is increasingly becoming an issue. Meantime, Citi saying copper's second secular bull market this century is now taking hold, driven by booming decarbonization-related demand growth. The firm said the price rise could cost unhedged consumers, think automakers, developers, and power companies, up to $320 billion over the next 3 years. And Strategus noted a, quote, explosive move for copper, saying Southern Copper, Freeport, and Teck Resources all remain favorites. All three are in the Global X Copper Miners Fund, which has gained some 25% this year. Freeport hitting a nearly 13-year high during Tuesday's trading session after Bank of America upgraded the stock to a buy, also raising its rating on Hub Day Minerals, which, Frank, is at a 2-year high.
You know, we've been talking about copper more in the last month or so, Pippa, than I think the whole time I've been at CNBC. A lot of people call it Dr. Copper because it's used in housing. But I want to ask you about its tech applications. What about demand when it comes to artificial intelligence and data centers?
Well, we're only 4 years, 4 months, I should say, into the year, and it already feels like AI is definitely the big theme of this year. And so investors are moving beyond the NVIDIA and the chip names and now looking for secondary plays. And copper certainly is one, because think about all of the grid infrastructure, all the power infrastructure that's needed to support all of these data centers driven by Gen AI. And so according to Morgan Stanley, copper could see about a 26% compound annual growth rate. That is really big for a metal that's seen pretty, you know, standard demand over the past decade or so. And also with all this focus on the demand side, we cannot forget about the supply side, because we have seen disruptions in places like Panama. And then when you talk about having to bring a new mine online, you're looking at about 15-year time span. And so it's really hard to increase supply. And just as the demand was already being lifted by the energy transition, seemingly out of nowhere, we had this surge in data centers. And so, Frank, copper could be moving higher on this demand from all these different verticals.
Copper's having a moment. Copper up 11% year to date. Pippa Stevens, great reporting as always. Good to see you. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, Boeing's crisis, it deepens with new whistleblower allegations over its 787 Dreamliner jumbo jet. We have analyst reaction to that and much, much more when we return. Stay with us.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We turn now to a developing story as we watch shares of Boeing face some pressure ahead of the open. The Associated Press reporting, CEO David Calhoun has been summoned to testify on Capitol Hill next week over the safety of his company's aircrafts. This follows new whistleblower allegations around its 787 Dreamliner, which claim the company used shortcuts that could reduce the lifespan of those planes and cause significant damage. Boeing denying the allegations, saying it's fully confident in the Dreamliner. In a statement adding, the claims are, quote, inaccurate and do not represent the comprehensive work Boeing has done to ensure the quality and long-term safety of the aircraft. All this as Boeing's quarterly plane deliveries fall to their lowest level in nearly 3 years. Production concerns and lower capacity, just two of the issues that Boeing customer Delta Airlines could address when it reports earnings in the next hour. While the airline has outperformed its peers so far this year, strong guidance, it may be too much to ask. Analysts say Delta is a leader in international and corporate travel, but aircraft delivery constraints will likely weigh on capacity in coming months. Delta previously offered a disappointing forecast to start the year after posting its best ever annual revenue in 2023. Joining me now with her expectations is Sheila Kahaglu, aerospace and defense analyst at Jefferies. Sheila, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. Thank you very much.
All right, why don't we start with Delta? You have a price target of $58 on Delta, more than 20% upside on the stock. What are you seeing in the travel market that's given you so much confidence?
So actually, when we think about Boeing, it's the pressure and capacity should be positive for the domestic airline industry. Why is that? So particularly on the 737, which is used for domestic travel versus the 787, which is a wide body for international travel, we're seeing production pressures, right? Boeing is about 100 aircraft short already in the U.S. domestic market to start the year at a 500 maxes we originally anticipated they would pour into this market, into the global market. So when we think about that, 100 aircraft short in a 5,000 narrow body market in the U.S., it seems like 2.5 points of capacity is taken out. And that should be positive for pricing. If each point of capacity is 1 point of price, it's a 10% move in EBITDA for these airlines. So significantly positive. And who would be the biggest beneficiary in our view? Delta and American. Why is that? Because unlike United and Southwest, they're not expecting a significant number of planes.
Sheila, let me jump in for a second, because that's completely counterintuitive. I would actually think having fewer planes would hurt their business, but you're saying it's going to lift pricing, something that we continue to see in the airline industry. Before, it used to be a race to the bottom for the cheapest seats, but now people want more of those premium seats, and if you have fewer planes, it's more of a battle for the premium seats. Is that what you're saying is going to benefit Delta?
Exactly. Load factors are already high, and if you're an airline that's not expecting a significant number of planes this year, that means you didn't pre-hire the pilots, the flight attendants. you're not carrying that extra cost on your balance sheet.
Okay. On the other side here, I want to make sure we touch on Boeing as well. This certainly is not going to be a tailwind for Boeing. What do you make of these whistleblower allegations, CEO David Calhoun, who we know is stepping down, being called to Capitol Hill, and just some of the ongoing cultural and production issues there?
You know, when it comes to Boeing, the number one question from investors is, who is the next CEO? How long will it take? How long is the stock in CEO, interim CEO purgatory? And once that CEO comes in, clearly they're going to have a background that's focused on operations, and that's going to be their biggest concern. How long is it going to take to turn around Boeing and lift production from the mid-teens levels we're seeing today on the 737 versus they should be a close to 40. So we're at 50% lower output than we should be at. So Boeing, you know, the biggest focus right now is the 737. The 87 whistleblower news did not have much detail to it, but I will tell you, the 787 right now is producing at 5 a month. It's just a much more crafted aircraft. Lower volume means, you know, less scrutiny on getting the aircraft out of production faster, right? So the 787 is experiencing some interior issues, but we don't see a major issue there right now.
All right, so Sheila, next to you, we're showing a chart of Boeing down 15% over the last year, year to date, down about 30%. I want to ask you, is all the bad news priced in? We did just mention these whistleblower allegations, but do you see the stock moving lower? Or are we seeing Boeing right now at its bottom?
We're seeing Boeing at its bottom, but kind of could stay around here for the next few months. Why is that? Because we're going to see in Q1 a $4.7 billion free cash flow outflow. Q2 is going to be another few billion. That means they have to generate a significant amount of cash in the second half to meet their cash guidance for the year. So we could see another cut to free cash flow from where consensus is. We're significantly lower than that at the moment than the street. So we could see numbers come down and the new CEO take some time to revamp what the production line looks like. So it's at the lows. We think all the bad news is priced in. We don't expect any more bad news, but we could see number revisions.
All right. Again, Boeing shares down more than 30% year to date. Sheila Kayaglu, great to see you as always. Thank you for your time and your insight.
Thanks.
All right. For much more Adult This Quarter, be sure to catch Phil LeBeau's exclusive interview with CEO Ed Bastian. That's coming up at 7:10 a.m. Eastern Time today. Also coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, Alibaba co-founder Jack Ma takes a very rare step out of the shadows with new comments to the delight of shareholders. We'll be right back with that and much more. Stay with us. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures with stocks coming off kind of a bit of a mixed session. Take a look right now, though. Solidly in the green. Looks like the Dow would open up just about 40 points higher off of its highs of earlier this morning. We're also checking the bond market ahead today, ahead of today's March inflation report. We're going to have much more on that in just a moment. Treasury yields trading at their highest level since November. Take a look at the benchmark at 4.35. That's moved up about 15 basis points since the PCE report in March. We're going to talk a lot about inflation coming up in just a second. We're also watching Bitcoin and reports out of Hong Kong that they will likely approve spot Bitcoin ETFs next week, with some launching sometime this month. Bitcoin right now fractionally higher. Remember, it trades around the clock. We'll continue to watch it throughout the show to see if we see any more movement in cryptocurrency. All right, to the big story today, investors preparing for the big event of this week. That's March CPI. That report due out just under 3 hours from now. It's expected to show the Fed's fight against inflation is far from over. The data expected to show a slight drop from February, but compared to a year ago, that number expected to tick up to 3.4% from the previous reading. It's a different story when you strip out food and energy, the core figure likely showing just a slight drop, but still well above the Fed's 2% target. Ahead of that report, Atlanta Fed President Rafael Bostic saying he still expects one rate cut this year, adding, though, he's not ruling out the possibility of no cuts, depending on the direction of inflation and the overall economy. For much more, let's bring in Roger Ferguson, former Federal Reserve Vice Chairman, former TIAA CEO and president, as well as a CNBC contributor. Roger, you got a long resume. Hello from London. I'm going to jump in it. What are you expecting from this CPI report? What do you make of all these Fed officials coming out talking about possibly no cuts this year?
Look, I think I'm broadly in the consensus, but the main message from the CPI report is whatever it does, it's still well above the 2% target. And even if it comes down slightly, it's moving very slowly. So what do I make of the chorus of voices from the Fed? I think they're seeing what we're seeing, which is they've always said they need to be convinced that inflation is coming down. And the last couple of reports cannot have increased their level of conviction. So I think they're simply reporting what the facts tell them, which is they're not yet there, even though they had a forecast in the SEP of potentially three cuts. The economy may not be unfolding as they expected, and consequently, they and the market should be dialing back expectations of cuts going forward.
Yeah, it seems voices like Rafael Bostic are signaling to the market you need to dial back those expectations. We often cover these inflation reports, you know, every coffin spit, that's the phrase I like to use, but they are actually backward looking. I want to ask you, as we see a rise in commodities and also a rise in oil prices, one specific commodity that has a big impact on the economy, how does the Fed view that? Do they take that into consideration?
Look, I think they're trying to understand exactly what inflation dynamics are. And yes, they've got to be recognizing that some of the inputs might be firming up. So commodities, one of them. Look, also, there's a question of the market signal that's coming from the Treasury market, which is suggesting higher interest rates as well, and certainly no, you know, coming off of the boil, so to speak, of a good economy. So they're looking at all of these signals to both look at what happened in the past and try to figure out the future. And that's another reason why I think you're getting some, you know, signals that maybe we should not be so certain about expectations, because they're not so certain yet about inflation coming down.
All right, Roger, if you don't mind, I want to try to give the market some optimism. Looking at the CME Fed Watch tool right now, a month ago, there was a 60% chance of a quarter point cut in June. Remember, we do have another meeting before June. Right now, it's at a 50% chance. So the market sees it basically at 50-50. Is there an argument to see that cut still happen in June, despite some of these stronger economic reports we're seeing? Is there also a concern that the Fed, if they don't cut, they might wait just a little bit too long?
Look, I think they're worried about it. And so I think you heard a couple of them talking about the risk being much more balanced now, maybe evenly balanced. So they certainly know that there's a risk of keeping rates too high as inflation is coming down. But it is, you know, a balanced risk right now. And I think June is at best 50-50. If I wanted to give the market optimism, I think the optimism comes from the fact that the underlying economy is very strong. Consumers continue to be in pretty good shape and may be very good shape. The job market is continuing to produce jobs, and individuals are coming to take those jobs. So, you know, the optimism for the market should be, oh, maybe the economy doesn't need a boost of inflation, of interest rate reductions, because it's doing pretty well.
So I want to get your perspective. You've been in the room when these decisions are getting made. When Fed officials are talking about the possibility of no cuts, do they consider the fact that we may, even though inflation is higher than expected, but we may just be on that so-called path for a soft landing, and maybe inflation expectations, they just need to change in the post-pandemic world? Is that a conversation that you think they may be having?
Look, I think there's a longer-term conversation among the central bank community, those in the room and economists who've been in the room, about what the longer-term so-called neutral rate is, whether or not there are a number of factors that are going to allow the economy to function well and inflation be relatively well contained, you know, at numbers, at interest rates that are higher than we had thought originally. So that is certainly one of the conversations. It's not the one that's going to drive the decision-making here, but it's going to be the one as they think about their framework, et cetera, that's going to come up. So, yep, that is certainly on people's minds. I don't think it's the short-term decision-making, however. That's being driven by the incoming data and, okay, as you suggest, whatever the forecast might be.
So no chance they might ease off the idea of getting back to 2% inflation? I mean, one of the things that really sparked some of the inflation we saw were supply chain concerns and also continued consumer spending. Supply chain concerns have eased, but people have not stopped spending by any means.
I don't think they're going to step back off of the 2% inflation target at this moment. They've reiterated it several times. And understand, if they start to signal that maybe 2% is not the target, they risk one of the things that's been helping them, which is so-called inflation expectations. Inflation expectations, by almost all measures, are reasonably well anchored, roughly around that 2% number. And that is one of the things that's really important for them. So I think stepping back from the 2% target at this stage leaves people wondering, well, what is the target? And then things become a little unanchored. So I think it's better for them to do what they're doing, reflect the data as it comes in, show some nimbleness as need be, but don't change the target, you know, halfway through the game, so to speak.
Okay.
That would be, I think, inappropriate.
Yeah. Something that Neil Kashkari kind of hit on is that if they change that target, they could possibly lose the confidence of the market and also just, you know, the public in their decision making. Roger Ferguson, is always great to have you with us on a day like this. We appreciate your time and your insight.
Thank you.
All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, our Diana Olick shows us how one former office building in the Big Apple, it could serve as the model to solve two very big problems facing the real estate sector. But first, we got some of your top trending stories. Costco's most in-demand product is getting even more popular. Wells Fargo estimates the retailer is selling as much as $200 million in gold bars this month. Yes, actual gold bars. Costco saw $100 million in gold bar sales between their debut in late August and late November. My question is, where do you put them? Where do you put them? It's not just the cost of gold moving higher. The U.S. Postal Service says it wants to raise the price of stamps by 5 cents. If approved, the change would mark the fourth increase since the start of last year. And the battle of the chicken sandwiches, it's back on. Shake Shack appearing to throw shade at Chick-fil-A with its free chicken shacks every Sunday in April promotion, saying it prides itself on offering the sandwiches 7 days a week. Burn. In contrast, Chick-fil-A has been closed on Sundays since its debut. I never tried any of the sandwiches, but if the wars are heating back up, just as a journalist, I might have to give it a go. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up next. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your morning call sheet. We start with Morgan Stanley raising its price target on NVIDIA from $795 to $1,000 per share. It says as the company's business continues to strengthen, it is the best way to get exposure to the AI theme. Dual price target cuts for Tesla. Piper Sandler lowering its price target from $225 down to $205 per share, while Jefferies is cutting its rating, its price target, I should say, from $185 down to $165. The two citing concerns around Q1 results and growth for those moves. And Barclays initiating coverage of Chevron with an overweight rating and a $203 price target. It calls the energy giant compelling with above average cash return and attractive valuation. All right, turning to the real estate sector and continued conversations around the slumping office market versus the ongoing shortage of residential spaces. Some developers, they're finding a way to tackle two problems with one solution. Our Diana Olick has more on one developer making a big shift with an old office building in New York City.
Good morning, Frank. I'm standing on top of Pearl House, New York City's largest office to apartment conversion to date. But not every office building can be converted. In fact, just about 5 to 8% nationwide.
This was originally a 500,000-square-foot 1970s office tower, now a 30-story luxury apartment building. The Van Barton Group purchased the building about a decade ago, knowing that the single tenant would be moving out, leaving the building entirely vacant. They could have bought it today at a much bigger discount, but the math still works.
The way we really look at it is, how will institutional investors value and ultimately pay for a almost 600-unit market rate apartment building such as this, and it far exceeds both the acquisition costs and the construction costs to convert it into multifamily.
The biggest roadblock to conversions like this is zoning laws, what can and cannot be converted depending on location and age of the building. Then basics, like most office windows don't open, but apartment windows must. These were replaced, but it can be a financial deal breaker, and you usually can't add to the building's space. So in this case, they carved out and closed off an interior section that was too far away from any windows anyway. They then took that extra eligible space and added this amenities floor, as well as those pricey penthouses up top, several stories of them. Rents here go from about $3,000 a month for a studio to up to $10,000 a month for those penthouses. Frank.
All right, it's time now for your global briefing. We start with a story we told you about earlier in the show, Fitch downgrading its outlook on China to negative from stable. The agency says the country faces more uncertain economic prospects, citing wider fiscal deficits and rising government debt. Fitch is still affirming its A-plus rating on China due to its large and diversified economy and critical role in global trade. Shares of Alibaba, they're jumping today. Co-founder Jack Ma posting a rare, lengthy memo to employees in an effort to boost morale, expressing his support of the company's restructuring efforts. Ma also praising the leadership of new CEO Eddie Wu and Chairman Joe Tsai, saying the split has helped streamline operations and make Alibaba more customer-focused. It's a very rare move for Ma, who has spent the last few years out of the spotlight. And Taiwan Semi reporting first quarter revenue rose more than 16%, beating forecasts. The world's largest contract chip maker is benefiting from the surge in demand for AI products. Revenue rising 34% in March alone. Taiwan Semi will report full results next week. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus the advice our next guest is offering on the Fed rate cut expectations, and why we just may not be out of the woods just yet when it comes to inflation. And tomorrow, CNBC lands in Colorado to explore how Denver and Boulder have leveraged the Rocky Mountain lifestyle to create two powerhouse economies, Cities of Success, Denver and Boulder. That premieres tomorrow at 10 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC. We're back in a moment. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your WEX wrap-up. We begin with Bloomberg reporting that Apple has assembled $14 billion worth of iPhones in India so far this fiscal year. That accounts for just about 1 in 7 of all new iPhones globally. Apple is also following Amazon and Microsoft's lead, reportedly expanding its presence in Florida by 45,000 square feet. The company already has a smaller office in the area, focused mainly on Latin America and its ad business. Microsoft is working with Chinese video game maker NetEase to bring popular games like World of Warcraft back to the country after a public fallout ended their decade-long partnership last year. Chinese EV stocks, they're rallying as Tesla's market share continues to decline. Names like NIO, Li Auto, and XPeng building on positive delivery numbers and government initiatives around new car loan rules. TikTok parent company ByteDance posting a 60% surge in profit, outpacing growth from Tencent and Alibaba. This marks the first time ByteDance has outperformed Tencent in both revenue and profit. Shares of Boeing, they're lower again as the FAA investigates a new whistleblower claim over alleged structural flaws around the 787 Dreamliner jet. In response, Boeing says it's fully confident in the model and that the allegations are inaccurate. The AP also reporting CEO David Calhoun has been asked to testify on Capitol Hill next week. Here's what to watch today, the big market event of the week, March CPI. That's out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. We also get wholesale trade figures and the monthly federal budget statement today. Delta Airlines reports first quarter results in the next hour. The minutes from last month's Fed meeting are out at 2 p.m. Eastern. We also hear from Fed Governor Michelle Bowman today. The markets, they've been inching along this week as investors, they just wait for today's CPI data, worried inflation remains stubborn and the Fed may only cut rates once or twice, maybe even not at all this year. Joining me now is Kevin Simpson, founder and chief investment officer at Capital Wealth Planning. Kevin, good morning from London. I'm going to jump right into it. What are your expectations for CPI? How do you think it impacts the market?
Well, I think it's what the market has been waiting for. Are we seeing a continued abatement of inflation? Is it leveling out? Or God forbid, is it starting to resurge? Because that's the last thing we need, is inflation to come back, because it'll affect the Fed's narrative in a very negative way. We're already hearing about maybe only one rate cut, maybe zero rate cuts. And I think that the market would really like to see some rate cuts. I think the Fed would like to give us some rate cuts. But as they've been telling us for years, they're going to remain data dependent, Frank. So if we see a number today for core, somewhere around 3.7, 3.8, I think the market will like it. If it's too hot, I would expect continued volatility.
All right, you would expect continued volatility. If it's just a bit too hot, I mean, our last report, it was like 0.1% too hot. So you're saying anything like that, we might see some volatility. I also want to see how you're seeing today shaping up. What's your WEX word of the day?
The WEX word of the day is inflation. We want to keep it simple. Everything's going to boil down to how this CPI number comes out. I know we get PPI tomorrow, which we never used to really talk about, but it's a precursor for PCE. We're looking for data points. We're looking for a narrative that's telling us inflation is coming down. And it has. I mean, the Fed raised rates a lot. There's a lag effect. That's so far so good, but it's been sticky for a long time. And maybe that last mile is going to be a challenge. But what the Fed doesn't want to do, and we should agree with this, is we don't want them cutting rates too quickly just to fuel inflation. So it's a fine line. Is June still in play? Probably. Is it likely? I doubt it. We'll know a lot more today. But one data point, as we say every month, doesn't make the market. But we need to see that trend continue in an abatement of inflation for sure, Frank.
Okay, so if we see the volatility to the downside, the markets take a dip. I know you're looking to buy, but I can't get the words out. You're specifically looking to buy in stocks that are tied to the rally in commodities.
Yeah, if our thesis is true, that we're not going to head into a recession, that the consumer's strong, the economy's strong, and we're seeing volatility sort of as a temper tantrum because we're not getting what we want out of the Fed, we think that commodities make a whole lot of sense. Now, I own these names. We are investors in these. We're talking about adding to them on dips. But Freeport, Marathon, these are companies with relatively low multiples, tons and tons of free cash flow. So as you head into driving season, if you believe in the commodity trade, these are names that we feel could be very, very attractive. Freeport, also in the same vein from a commodity play, it's a little bit pricey here. It has to come down. It's been rallying on this enthusiasm of copper, and that's a really long, long-term trend. But if you see pullbacks, if you see weakness, if you're looking for a space outside of mega tech, we think commodities make a whole heck of a lot of sense. And we will be adding to these three names on any pullback that we see in the immediate future.
All right, I know your other pick for us today is Amgen. We don't have time to get to that. But Kevin Simpson, it is always great to see for you. You're saying on a dip, you want to buy stocks tied to the commodity rally. Again, great to see you. One more quick look at futures. Pretty much muted right now as we await that CPI report. Looks like the Dow would open up about 40 points higher. The S&P and the NASDAQ just slightly higher right now. The Dow off of its highs of earlier. That's going to do it for us. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.